You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada, indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Dr. Joanne Liu, International President of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be sitting down with Collins Ogor, a McGill doctor, an MBA grad, and founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a digital health technology and advocacy startup committing to preventing kidney failure. Collins, thanks for joining us today. Collins, tell us about your years. Where are you from and what did your family do?
First, thanks for having me, Carl. So I'm from Nigeria. I was born and bred in Nigeria. Started off in a smaller city called Port Harcourt and then lived out most of my teenage years in Lagos. So my father was an oil executive, worked for oil companies, and my mother was a fashion designer. And I moved to Canada for school, for higher education, when I was 17.
So where is your first degree from?
My first degree is from McMaster University.
In what subject?
It was in, I did an honors bachelor of science in psychology, neuroscience, and behavior.
Why did you choose Canada and Mac?
Honestly, I just wanted to get as far away from my parents as possible.
Okay.
I'm being facetious. So I originally, you know, I was sort of a precocious kid in the sense that, you know, I showed a lot of potential when I was younger, not necessarily through grades, but just with the way I spoke and how sort of entrepreneurial I was. So I remember I had this bet with my dad when I was maybe 9 years old, and I won that bet. And the price of that bet was that I would go out of the country for my higher education. So that was a promise my parents made to me when I was really young. So when I got to that point, I had three choices, really. One was the UK, one was the US, and one was Canada. And at the time, we're talking 2007, 2008, because I moved to Canada January 2009. So at the time, the big issue in those two countries, UK and the US, was sort of their approach towards immigrants. Right. So Canada, of course, like, you know, has a very phenomenal, a great reputation around welcoming immigrants. And it just felt like the right place for me. I had an immediate elder sister who was 2.5 years older than me, and she was thriving in Canada. So she had made that move earlier than myself. And then at the end of the day, I chose McMaster actually because I just loved the campus. I went to visit my sister, my older sister who was there. And I just fell in love with the atmosphere, and it just felt like the right place for a 17-year-old who's halfway across the world from home, you know?
As a young black man, how much did you stand out? Like, were you unusual, or were there a lot of people that looked like you at Mac?
As you can imagine, I stood out like a sore thumb. But interestingly, there is quite a significant black, but especially Nigerian community at McMaster. But having said that, I mean, we're still a minority, right? So I stood out like a sore thumb. I'd never left Nigeria before I came to Canada. And so it was my first time really being a minority. This concept of being a minority was novel, was alien to me, you know. No pun intended there. But yeah, so I did stand out, that's for sure. And the way I dressed didn't help either.
Well, how do you dress?
I always loved clothes. Like I said, my mother is a fashion designer. So it didn't matter what day of the week it was, whether it was an 8 a.m. class or a 6 p.m. class. I was always fully dressed up. I used to love streetwear back then. So I would coordinate my hats with my sneakers and my jacket and everything.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today we're speaking with Collins Ogor, founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a health tech startup focused on helping prevent kidney failure. One of your startups is still a fashion store. How did you get into that, and what are you up to with it these days?
Great question. So the story with that was that, you know, when I started at McGill, I did the joint MD-MBA. Right. So one of the privileges of that was that I was able to go right from my graduating from my undergrad into the joint program. So I was very young. Like I said, I loved fashion. And at that time, I had really started getting into classic menswear. So I loved suits. And so my thinking was, you know, I was 21 years old, starting my MBA, 8 years younger than the average class, the average age of my class. My thinking was I will wear a suit every day and, you know, people will not see how young and it's foolish I am. It didn't work. I got found out by the first time I opened my mouth to talk. But what happened was I got this reputation as the suit guy. So on the weekends, I'll take my classmates shopping because they needed new wardrobes for this, you know, new management jobs they were all getting. And they would always commend to me that, look, you're really good at this. You know, you could start a business from this. And the big thing that I realized from doing that was that there wasn't any sort of place in the city where I felt that I could just refer my friends to. And I know that 100% they'll be well taken care of. The customer retail experience will be phenomenal. So fast forward to, I believe it was the summer of 2015. I was sort of at the point where I needed to figure out how I was going to finance the rest of my MD-MBA. As an international student, the bank wouldn't give me a loan, so I had to get entrepreneurial. So I reached out to all my classmates. I did a Facebook group. I sent a SurveyMonkey to all the gentlemen in my class and asked them basically if they were going to be my customers if I started something like this. I got a 75% response rate. And that's how I got into this business. In terms of the second half of your question, what we're up to these days with Maison Le Poème, which is the name of the brand, is we realized through the pandemic that actually our biggest asset as a company, as a brand, is the community. So we are now really, really putting a lot of effort on building out that community, strengthening the community that we sort of created organically of young, both men and women, young professionals, ambitious professionals. And so we're doing a lot of events. We have people come to the space, using the space for different creative activities. And naturally, that just leads into more revenue or more sales from our core business, which is still made to measure suits.
So what's new with suits today? During the pandemic, a lot of people working from home, kind of one rumor is suits are going away. But do you see suits having a renaissance or having a special place in men's lives?
I think that would always be the case, right? And there's a reason we call it classic menswear. And we also, for us, one of the big words of our brand is timeless, right? The idea that, you know, you look at pictures from the 40s and the way gentlemen dressed back then, you can put the same person on the street today and they'll be the most stylish, you know, person. So the way we see sort of things shaping out from a trend perspective with the pandemic and everything is our client base is really turning into two very distinct groups. And we title them the romantics and the pragmatics. So the romantics are guys like myself who on a Monday morning while doing this interview and I'm wearing a flannel, double-breasted, pinstripe suit, right? Those are the romantics. These are guys who will always wear suits regardless of what's happening with the rest of the world. And then you have the pragmatics who wear suits specifically if they have to, right? For work, for an event, a presentation, a wedding. And those things will still stand, right? We're still going to wear suits or tuxedos for weddings. But what we're seeing now with the pandemic or after the pandemic is a lot of guys are actually converting into romantics where they're realizing that there's this sort of flair within them that they've just sort of hidden or tried to be conservative for so long. And now it's like, you know what? Let's leave. Let's dress up. Let's look great. Let's feel great.
You're listening to the CEO Series. Today, we're speaking with Colin Zogar, founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a health tech startup focused on helping prevent kidney failure. Where do ideas come from for the fashions for suits for this and next year? Is it somebody in Paris kind of says, this is where we're going? Or where do the ideas come from?
So for us, really, it's I'm going back to two words that I've said a couple of times. It's classic and timeless, right? Okay. So for us, nothing really changes from the trend. We're not following any sort of trends, right? The one thing that we have within us that I think is different from a lot of other brands is that we actually wear our clothes, right? Like myself, my co-owners, we're going about in the suits that we make. And so a lot of the whatever changes we make comes from our own experience of experimenting with the clothes.
I mean, it's interesting because you're a medical doctor. We'll talk about what you're doing with kidney in our next section. But you're a man of many parts. How does the fashion thing and the medical looking into kidney disease, how do those, do they fit together in some way?
That's a phenomenal question. And I think perhaps when people meet me and hear my story, that's sort of what throws them off the most, because we are, as humans, generally speaking, also from a psychology perspective, we like to put people in boxes, right? And those are two boxes that just don't fit into each other. But the one thing about me that I learned early on is that I'm a man of passion. You know, I have to absolutely have all my heart in something in order to do it. And as a result of that, if I really become obsessed with something, I have to do it. Like, I have to go all in. And that's how, you know, this fashion business ultimately started. There's a very interesting quote from a book called Principles by Ray Dalio. And in that book, Ray Dalio talks about the fact that to a certain degree, it doesn't matter if you're running a $10 a year in revenue business or a $10 million revenue business. You learn a lot of lessons from that tiny business that are applicable in the other business. And so for me, you know, you talk about my degrees at McGill, Doctor of Medicine, Master of Surgery, Masters of Business Administration. With all due respect to McGill, I think the most important degree that I've gotten in the last 7 years has been from running my fashion brand, from starting it from nothing, right? It's been the best education in entrepreneurship. And now I look at myself now over the last 18 months now trying to start or starting up a venture business in healthcare, which is, of course, another passion of mine. And all of the lessons that I've gotten, I've learned over the last 7 years, I'm really bringing them to the play now. And I feel quite confident as an entrepreneur as a result of that. So that's how I think they both go hand in hand.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Colin Zogar, founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a digital health technology startup committed to helping prevent kidney failure. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about what Colo Care does and the problem they're helping to solve.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again. You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm in Montreal speaking with Colin Zogar, founder and CEO of Colo Cares. So right off bat, what does Colo Cares, what does the name come from first?
Yeah, that's so Colo Cares. So the story, I'll go back to my childhood. I was 12 years old when I had this two crazy ideas that I wanted to be a doctor and I wanted to be a businessman, an entrepreneur. And this was because all the clinics, all the good hospitals in Nigeria were privately owned. So my 12-year-old mind, my ambition was that I was going to be this big mogul building hospitals and clinics. Very sadly, at around the same time, my aunt, who was my mom's best friend, my aunt Helen, was diagnosed with kidney failure. And we used to go to her dialysis 3 times a week at a hospital called St. Nicholas Hospital in Lagos, which was also private. And on one day, I told her that, you know, I'm going to build a hospital like this one day. And she said, wow, that's incredible. You know, just being encouraging to this 12-year-old kid. What are you going to call it? And in my head, I just learned that Adidas was the combination of the first and last name of the founder. So I said Kolog, which is my first name, C-O-L-L and O-G-H. And she just found that so hilarious and adorable. And she passed away shortly after, but till she passed away, she called me Kolog. So that's where the name Kolog comes from. And we went with Cares because we wanted to be super clear that, of course, we're a technology company, but the first thing that we are is a care company.
What is the problem that you're trying to solve or make better out there in the world?
Yeah, the problem that we're trying to solve is that the WHO, the World Health Organization, calls kidney failure a neglected epidemic. The mortality rates have gone up by almost 40% in the last 30 years since 1990. The cost of treating kidney failure is astronomical. both in the in Asia, Africa, Latin America, but also in Europe and North America, kidney failure is killing people left, right, and center. It is a disease that also disproportionately affects marginalized patient populations, such as racial minorities. No one is talking about prevention. All of the focus is on treatment, which, to be frank, in the last 50 years, there hasn't been a lot of innovation on the treatment side. But no one is talking about prevention. Now, we know that this is a disease that if you detect it early, if you control certain, you know, things, certain diabetes, hypertension, you know, blood pressure, blood sugar, you know, with lifestyle changes, you can prevent this disease. But the big problem is that we live in a sick care system where we'd rather wait for people to get really sick, and then we throw all sorts of expensive quote unquote treatments at them that have a poor, you know, success rate. And we say we're saving lives when we could prevent it in the first place. So this is basically the problem we're so passionate about solving.
And how are you going about solving it? What are you doing?
Great question. So to really explain that, let me paint the picture for you, right? Most cases of kidney failure come from a disease called chronic kidney disease. Chronic kidney disease, as the name suggests, is the gradual decline in the function of the kidneys over years. We're talking 15 to 30 years. Another term that's used to describe chronic kidney disease is a silent killer, because over those years, as your kidneys are declining, oftentimes you have absolutely no idea. So there are no significant specific symptoms. So what happens today in places where people are fortunate to even get diagnosed, once you get to what we call stage three, so it's grouped in stages, stage one to five, similar to cancer. At stage three, if you're fortunate enough to be diagnosed and you have access to care, you get to see a healthcare a nephrologist once every 3 months, or in some cases, once every 6 months. In the United States, the average length of time of that follow-up visit is 7 minutes. So you have a condition where there's a 1 in 2 chance that in 10 years' time, you're going to end up on dialysis, which is the treatment for kidney failure, or need a kidney transplant. You have a 1 in 2 chance in 10 years' time, you're going to end up there. And we give you less than 30 minutes of a specialist time every year. So what happens is the medication adherence rate is poor. These patients, they need support with diet, with exercise, with overall lifestyle changes. They have absolutely no guidance. So they leave the clinic visits more confused, and nothing changes, and then they end up on dialysis. Now, what we're doing specifically, how we're looking to start with solving this, is we're building a digital health ecosystem, right, that encompasses three components. The first component is monitoring devices, right? So wearables. Why can't we be collecting data from the patients every single day? Right now, we only collect it from them when they come to the clinic. Let's collect that data from them. So these are hardware devices. We do not manufacture those. Let's put that data into the second and central component of our ecosystem, which is a mobile app. We call it a digital health coach. So that app collects the data from the devices and uses it to guide the patients on a daily basis. Diet, exercise, medication adherence, kidney disease education on a daily basis. And then that data also goes into a care management platform, which is a healthcare provider facing web-based platform, so that doctors and nurses can in real time remotely see what is going on with all of your advanced kidney disease patients and know who they need to sort of triage up and increase the care. And then the third component underlying all of this is artificial intelligence. So with all of that data we're capturing, why can't we give each patient a personalized disease progression score so that the patients know how they're doing, but also their healthcare providers know who is close to the cliff, who needs additional intervention, who should we start preparing for the eventuality of dialysis or kidney transplant? So we're also, you know, building that AI component into our product, basically.
You're listening to the CO Series, and today we're speaking with Colin Zogar, founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a health tech startup focused on helping prevent kidney failure. Why does it affect racialized communities more? Is it their DNA or is it factors beyond that?
There's two big broad reasons. The first one is the socioeconomic factors, right? Remember when I described chronic kidney disease as a silent killer and most people don't know they have it. In order to be diagnosed with CKD and then start getting the treatment or the care that you need to prevent it, you need to have regular access to the healthcare system, right? You need to have annual checkups, biannual checkups, whatever. Most people of color don't have access to this level of care. But then there's also the fact that the lifestyle of people of color, again, linked to socioeconomic factors, right? They don't have access to fresh, healthy foods. They don't have access to parks or playgrounds or gyms or all of that. The kinds of jobs they do as well, you know, so they have higher rates, or we have, I should say, we have higher rates of obesity, of diabetes, of hypertension. The other side, which is unique to people of African origin, is genetics. So if you go across all the way across the African continent, that sort of middle belt, for lack of a better term, that area, because of the climate, is endemic to sleeping sickness, trypanosomiasis, which is carried by a vector called tsetsefly. Anyways, we developed a mutation to protect us against sleeping sickness, but that mutation is called the APOL1 gene. That mutation, though, makes us more prone to kidney failure.
When is the product launching, or is it out there now?
So it's launching in September of this year.
And who pays for it? Or is it the physician that's going to be the sponsor, or is it the patient, or who?
So the revenue, our revenue model is actually focused, targeted at health insurers. So I should say our initial target market is the United States. So chances are when we go into different countries, we'll have to adjust the revenue model to fit the healthcare system in each of these countries. But in the United States, the private insurers are really, really suffering from the cost of kidney failure treatment. So to put it in context, a kidney failure patient costs on average $120,000 to $150,000 a year. A non-kidney failure patient on average costs $15,000. So if you can prevent or even slow the progression of kidney failure by just 1 year, you're saving the health insurer a significant amount of money. But of course, you're also helping the patients. But from a revenue model, where it's a software as a service, whereby the health insurers pay a fixed fee every month for each of their advanced kidney disease patients that's on our digital health ecosystem.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Collins Ogor, founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a digital health technology and advocacy startup committed to preventing kidney failure. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about Colin's time at McKinsey Africa and the key lessons he's learned as an entrepreneur.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Collins Ogor, co-founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a digital health technology and advocacy startup committing to preventing kidney failure. Collins, the heart and the mind of an entrepreneur versus that of a corporate type. You've seen a lot in your MBA, a lot of corporate types, you've kept in touch with them. Any thoughts on how is an entrepreneur different than more of a corporate? And I've been a corporate type, IBM, Hitachi, Oxford, McGill, my whole life. What is it different about the entrepreneur?
I think the one word that really comes to mind is maverick. You know, the entrepreneur, in my personal experience, but also observations, the entrepreneur is someone who really doesn't fit anywhere, right? Again, going back to the reference I made about fitting in a box, the entrepreneur does not fit in the box, right? They don't take well to being told what to do without a why, a reasonable why. They will challenge authority, and they're always questioning everything, right? And I think to a certain degree, those traits can make life in the corporate world very difficult. That's why many entrepreneurs actually have to start from a relatively bad experience in the corporate world before they come to terms with the fact that they can't fit in anywhere. So they have to, you know, start their business. And I think another thing is entrepreneurs are obsessive. right? You get an idea in your head, you can't sleep at night, you just have to do it.
There's an interesting model here in Montreal, and I was down in the valley, and it's venture capitalists that kind of hire McKinsey, BCG types, do analysis of an industry, come up with what needs to be done and how it can be reinvented, and then go hire a CEO to do it. So instead of it something where it comes out of a passion, it comes more from an analytic view. So I saw it in the Valley and I see it here in Montreal. What's your sense of that kind of model? Does that make sense from your viewpoint?
It doesn't sit well with me, I'll be honest. You know, that's not my style. I mean, you know, we can look at the data and perhaps we might find a few successful ventures that started out like that. But I think there is something in that magic of the organic nature of an entrepreneur who sees a problem, suffers a problem, and from that passion starts it out. Having said that, though, we also have to be realistic and consider that the same traits that make you a good entrepreneur, oftentimes they make you bad at scaling up, right? Which is, we see this often, right? An entrepreneur starts, and at a point, you need a professional CEO to come in and scale up. So that is not to say that style of doing things or professional CEOs, quote unquote, are not valid. They are valid, but I think at the start, especially if you want to make not just incremental change, right? If you're doing incremental change, yes, yeah. But if you want to revolutionize an industry or the way something is done, I think you need that grit. Because ultimately it's that entrepreneurial grit, that entrepreneurial passion that keeps the company going, right? Through the tough times that every startup inevitably goes through.
You're listening to the CEO Series. Today, we're speaking with Colin Zogar, founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a health tech startup focused on helping prevent kidney failure. At one time, you'd thought, as I recall from earlier conversations, about starting in Nigeria. Because, I mean, you're from Nigeria, you're working at the time for McKinsey. Why did you pivot to the U.S. and you'll come back to Africa in time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this was the situation. So I actually had this idea while I was traveling, or I became really obsessed with this idea while I was traveling across the African continent, working in public health, in global health. And these are the numbers for Nigeria, right? We have 25 million people with chronic kidney disease.
Out of how many total?
Out of unofficially about 300 million.
Okay.
By 2050, billed to be 400 million people in that country. So we have 25 million people with chronic kidney disease. The last I checked from a Guardian article, we have 160 nephrologists in the whole country. 160. So where do you start from? Right. If you're going to build a product like ours, which, of course, it's a digital health coach and all of that. But on the back end, there's a reliance on an actual healthcare provider. Where do you start from? The way we view the problem, right, if you're going to solve it globally, ultimately, you need a bionic nephrologist. So basically, you need a software, an app, whatever you want to call it, that either a community health worker, a nurse, or a general practitioner can use to treat kidney disease patients at the same level of competence as a human nephrologist would. But we're not quite there yet. The science, the technology is not quite there yet. So our thinking was, let's start off in a market where the problem is huge. Let's start off in a market where the problem is close to our heart, given that it's people like us that look like us that are most affected by it. And let's start off with a market where we can get the revenues that we need to invest in the research and development to build ultimately a technology that can then be scaled to the rest of the world. So that is the vision.
So Africa will come in time, but the States is just a better market to launch it and get it to a point where it can help Africans.
Exactly. And Asians and Latin Americans, Europeans, all over the world, really.
So how long did you went back after your MD, MBA, and rather than practice medicine for decades, as you could have, you decided to work for McKinsey, one of the great consulting firms in the world, in Nigeria and in Africa. What led to that decision, and why did you decide to leave eventually?
Yeah, so while I was doing my MD, MBA, I actually didn't want to do consulting. It was one of the last things I would have thought I'd ever do, right? Getting towards the end of my medical school, I believe about 2 years before the end or a year and a half, it became clear to me that I wasn't excited enough about going into clinical practice right away. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a man of passion. So I made that decision that I was going to just take a year off, recover from 9 straight years of schooling and starting a business and all of that, and then figure out what my next steps would be. I still had that ambition at the time to practice clinically. As fate would have it, while I was doing the MD-MBA, I did a lot of research in access to tuberculosis diagnostics. So I'd gone to India for that work, I'd co-authored a couple of papers. At the time, the United Nations Office for Project Services, they needed someone to come in and work on a project related to the Global Drug and Diagnostics Facility, specifically for tuberculosis. So given my profile, I was the right fit. I got the job. So I went there for 3 months. I went to Geneva and I worked on this project. And it was basically a consulting gig. You know what I mean? And it was while doing that, you know, I actually remember the moment. It was my final presentation and I thought, wow, this is cool. You know, I could actually see myself being a consultant. So that's when I started opening up to the idea. As fate would have it, I got contacted by McKinsey Africa shortly afterwards. They had this division called the Africa Delivery Hub, which is a public social sector specialist practice. And they wanted me to come back to the continent. I'd been away from home for 10 years. That was just too enticing to turn down. And work in public health primarily, but also in economic development and infrastructure work. And I said, yes, let's do it. So it was phenomenal to, after 10 years, go back home at the age of 27 and see how things had changed in many ways, but also not changed in other ways.
So how long are you with McKinsey? A couple of years?
I was at McKinsey for 1 year and 2 days.
Okay, so you weren't going to leave before 1 year was out. Well, that makes sense. Today, I'm delighted speaking with Colin Zogar, founder and CEO of Colo Cares. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about whether Collins is an introvert or extrovert and what kind of working style he has these days.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Colin Zogar, co-founder and CEO of Colo Cares, a digital health technology startup. So, Collins, are you more introvert or extrovert?
More introverted, actually, surprisingly.
But as an entrepreneur, you got to be out there looking for money, looking for customers, looking for help, acting extroverted at times. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
It's for me, and I think it's part of one of the reasons I've been so drawn into your work, because I think you were perhaps the first person that really was able to put how I felt for most of my life in words, in the sense that I'm a very shy person, and this comes as a surprise to most people. But when I have to get out in front of people, I can put it on, right? I'd rather talk to a group of 1,000 people, a room full of 1,000 people on stage, than have a one-on-one conversation with a stranger at a dinner. So that is sort of the twisted
but
way
it's something where
works.
When you give that speech, yeah, you know your topic,
yeah,
and it really matters to the yeah world. So you kind of forget yourself,
yeah,
because of the mission, the purpose you have.
Mm-hmm.
Generation Z are looking for purpose. Your organization has it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a great purpose. I mean, do you see this reflected in other of your friends, Zs and younger millennials? Is that a theme you see out there?
Absolutely. It's a massive theme. And I think I would be surprised. I mean, I just don't know how any startup that is not mission driven or purpose driven can even survive anymore. Given us, of course, there is a scarcity of talent as well. But I'm seeing that everywhere I look.
How do you keep in shape? Very demanding schedule. How do you keep in shape these days?
So, 3 things.
Okay.
The first thing is I schedule it in, right? So I have on my schedule, Monday, 6 a.m., Tuesday, 6:30, Friday, 7 a.m. And then Wednesday or Thursday, depends, maybe 8 or 7 a.m. depending on schedule. But I have my workout scheduled in, and I actually consider it part of work. And one of the policies at my startup at Color Cares is we pay 1 hour every day for people to work out. So in your work schedule, you have that in. The second is I use a trainer. So I have a trainer that I work with three times a week, Monday, Tuesday, Friday. Phenomenal, phenomenal guy. Shout out Benoit. And then the third is I have fun with it. You know, everything I do is fun. I try to move around as much as possible and just really enjoy every element of whatever it is I'm doing. And so that keeps me quite active.
How's your French coming? Do you have a tutor?
I was worried you'd get there. Yeah.
Well, we have the same tutor.
So. Yeah, exactly. So I have the private tutor. The government of Quebec was also, you know, friendly enough to and generous to sponsor me for a training course through one of the incubators where I'm at Suntech. So I get some free 2 hours of class every day. And I'm trying more and more to just converse in French. I've also realized that my biggest problem is just that lack of confidence or that fear. So the more I step out of my shell when I speak in French, or at least listen to people in French, the better or more confident I'm becoming.
Do you have a Nigerian accent in French, or is it a Canadian? Like, do you have an accent in French, which is stands out a little bit in Quebec?
Yeah, I do. I don't know, but I've been told that I do. And I have a friend from Paris who always laughs whenever I speak French in a kind way. But she says your accent is so funny and cute, whatever that means.
Well, that could be worse things than that. So what book are you reading right now?
So right now I'm reading a book called That Will Never Work. And I believe I'm reading it for the third time, as a matter of fact. And it is a book by Mark Randolph, who was the original or the first CEO and co-founder of Netflix. And it tracks the story of how Netflix started, the ups and downs, the near-death experiences. Interestingly enough, how he got ousted as the CEO or told to step aside by Reed Hastings, who was a co-founder and investor at the time. And it's just a phenomenal book on the entrepreneurial journey of being a maverick, coming up with an idea that everyone says that will never work, but just trying it and figuring it out as you go along.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today we're sitting down with Collins Ogor, founder and CEO of Color Cares, a health tech startup founded on helping prevent kidney failure. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. How many hours of sleep do you need a night?
4 to 5.
Most of us need more. So you're genuinely like, this is fine. Your health is good. You know, maybe in 30 years you won't do this, but you've kind of tested yourself and that's fine.
So, Carl, I've been burnt out before. So it's something I'm very, very, very careful about. For myself, but also now that I'm also responsible for people. I have about nine people that are working on the startup right now, and it's going to grow in a matter of months and years. So I need to be super careful that I don't drive my employees, my co-founders into burnout, but I also need to be confident I don't drive myself into burnout. So I'm being very mindful of it. And I find that I can go stretches of time where I'm getting 4 or 5, but then I need a week where I need to, you know, say, okay, this week I got to go into my introvert show, because also interacting with people drains me out. I got to go into my introvert show. I need to catch up on sleep. I need to catch up on leisurely activities and stuff like that. So I'm being very mindful of that.
I'm doing a project with McKinsey now looking at, as a startup grows, you bring in a corporate type. The question is when, who, and how do you keep them? As the founder, at a certain point, it's your baby. You grew it. You developed it with your co-founder. Do you think it would be problematic for you to let go? Or is that something you go, I think I can deal with that? Or is it all very theoretical in a way?
Yeah, so I think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, talking about how you're going to ride a bicycle for the first time without ever riding one. So if you ask me now, logically speaking, I know what my weaknesses are, right? And I know that there is a chance that when it comes to the point of scaling up, I will need some, you know, some help. And logically, if you ask me now, I'm more than happy with that help coming, because for me, what is more important is the company, is the mission, not even the company, the mission. So if someone can come in and take that mission to another level, more so than I could do, then I'll be totally open to that. But again, until you're in that situation, you never know what your emotions will dictate.
Your startup in the fashion industry has been is bootstrapped, doing it yourself. How's the financing in this new venture?
Yeah, so it's totally different, you know, obviously given the scale of our ambition. So we have two big sources of funding at the moment. One is dilutive, one is non-dilutive. So dilutive, we've raised a quite substantial form from family and friends. And now we're starting to talk to more established angel investors and even venture capital firms. And then also, given the mission of our company, we're also tapping into or trying to tap into a lot of technology grants, a lot of government grants as well.
So Quebec and Canada have been helpful.
Absolutely, yeah.
It really must be helpful, your doctor, given what you're talking about. Like, that really adds credibility.
It does. It does. And, you know, without coming across as pompous to the audience, I genuinely feel that my unique education makes me, if not the best, but one of the best people to be at the helm of a company with this mission.
So it brings together both management and medicine.
Absolutely.
Being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Maybe following your mother's footsteps, but going out into the world.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the CEO Series. Collins, thank you for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna, our producer, Youssef Sahani, and scriptwriter, Stephanie Richet. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.